on calendar. See you there.
Freedom. My name is M1. I'm half of the legendary Tell It Like It Is, Everything Is Political rap duo Dead Prez. And this is WPFW, Washington, your station for jazz and justice.
This is a journey.
Would you join me, please, in welcoming
me? Redeem a full of college.
I got so much trouble on my mind. Refuse to lose. Here's your ticket.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Say what you say, say what?
I don't want to be like Mike.
Before Magic's knees go permanently south for the winter.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Changing up the guard quicker than fear brings down doo-doo. Young bro.
He never saw Elgin Baylor play during his day or Oscar Robinson.
Flash the dice roll back. The big O was jackknifing through all them bodies.
I didn't know nothing about it.
Welcome to the Collision. He's Chuck Modiano. I'm Dave Zirin here at your home for Jazz and Justice, 89.3 FM WPFW, where we try to change the world one broadcast at a time. Chuck Modiano, how you doing, sir?
Doing great. Good to be here. How are you doing, ZZ? Excuse me, TZ?
It's okay. Look, there's a lot we got to cover this week. I want to cover some of the latest in the local protest scene. I got to talk to you about the Dartmouth University basketball team, a very conservative Ivy League school where the men's team has voted to be part of the campus SEIU by a 13-2 vote. Crazy story happening.
I love it.
We got to talk about it. I want to talk to you about Caitlin Clark choosing to not take name, image, and likeness money and a ton of it to stay at Iowa for a fifth year, and instead talking about going to the WNBA. And if you haven't heard of Caitlin Clark, then you frankly haven't heard of the biggest name in college sports since ... Chris Webber. I mean, we're going back a minute. Maybe that's too far, but you get what I'm saying. I also want to talk a little bit about athletes for ceasefire. We got talk about whether the Dubs or the Lakers have a better chance of making a run. And we got to talk about the best team to beat the Celtics. We got all that stuff going on. And Chuck, real quick, you got headphones on you, buddy?
I do.
All right, we got to put the headphones on so we get the best possible sound. And now I go straight to you, Chuck, with this. I've got stuff to say, but I know you do too. Protest. What's happening in D.C.? What's happening in the world? What can you let us know?
Well, what I'll let you know is this past, let me start on this past Saturday. This past Saturday at the Zionist embassy, there was, I guess you could call a tribute to Aaron Bushnell, which was happening all week. I'm pretty sure every listener knows of who Aaron Bushnell is, the Marine. Felt there was no other alternative and felt there was to get the attention. And he, what is it, self-immolated? Is that the word they use?
Self-immolated, yes.
Yeah, which is in many ways the highest form of personal protest. And so there was a tribute for him because, you know, he had a lot of things to say. And there was a tribute at the Zionist embassy. And then there was a march from the Zionist embassy to the ambassador of Israel in more quieter streets. And that was Saturday, and that was about 5 hours, but it was five incredible hours, I might say. There was just such unity, such purpose. And in interviewing a number of people, I think what I heard maybe three or four times during interviews was, this is therapeutic. Yeah, yes, we're here for a purpose. We're here to stop the genocide. We're here to stop the funding of the genocide by Joe Biden, by most of Congress. We're here to do that. But this is therapeutic. And in some ways, the rage that happened and the decision that Aaron Bushnell made, I don't think people there, while no one is looking to make that step, people there can say, I don't understand it, because there's a rage that is going on. Like, how are you not seeing what we're seeing? How are you not acting in a humane way? So people said, this is therapeutic beyond everything else we're doing, because in every other part of life, I'm screaming and people around me are acting normal. And this is normal. This is normal out here. The only normalcy is to be outraged. And I also included our WPFW's Katia Stitt. It's always great to see Katia in the street. And I just posted that a few minutes ago. But it was a different vibe than a lot of the protests. It was sort of therapeutic. And at the same time, we're trying to hold this government accountable. And that has not changed. And so there's been a almost daily protest around the country, in New York, in L.A., in D.C. There is certainly one tomorrow at Lafayette Square at 1 p.m. for International Women's Day. I believe there's one at 6 p.m. At Lafayette Square as well this evening. And then this keeps going on. So people aren't stopping. People aren't shutting down. People are interrupting politicians at every turn, including Jamie Raskin in Montgomery County a couple of weeks ago. That's not going to stop. It will not stop. The people will keep going.
Wow.
That includes Tacoma. And you could talk on that.
Well, I'll only say one thing. You know, we're in the middle, and I don't want to say too much, but we're in the middle of a push, a long-term push. It feels like forever, to get the Tacoma Park City Council to pass a resolution calling for a ceasefire. And the one thing I want to say about it, and I have a lot to say about it, but I'm going to keep this very short, is that the main argument against passing a resolution, they say, is that it would be divisive to the community, divisive for people who believe in what Israel is doing right now to Gaza, and versus people who are trying to call for peace, that it would be divisive, divisive, divisive. You know, because anybody who calls for a ceasefire must be anti-Semitic. That's the argument being made from the other side. And obviously, as a Jewish person, I want to be very clear that there is nothing anti-Semitic about calling for a ceasefire. My goodness, it's I think in accordance with any droplet of any religious morality to stop what's going on there right now. But what I do want to talk about very briefly is this question of division, because what's divisive is what Israel is doing. What's divisive is the way it's tearing apart our community. What's curative is for us to come together and say, heck no. That's curative, not divisive. And when people call you divisive, what they're really saying is that you are pointing out divisions that already exist.
That's right.
And that's, I mean, so to me, are you going to call me an arsonist because I point to a house that's on fire?
That's right.
No. So don't call me divisive if I'm saying this community is so divided because, you know, people who are peace and justice activists, Jewish Voices for Peace, my Palestinian siblings out there, like they all feel like they are just under a shroud of darkness. That's divisive. And I think I just wanted to make that point. You know, one of the joys of having a radio show, particularly after a kind of frustrating city council meeting, is that I can gun on and just say, you know, let's end this charade. That's my fancy way of saying charade. Let's end this charade of saying that this is somehow divisive because we're calling for a ceasefire, when in fact it's a statement of unity.
That's right.
Unity.
And justice.
And justice.
And justice. And I hate the word too. I hate the word divisive because it's the language of the privilege. Let's just be honest. It's the language of the privileged. okay? Because Divisive, as you said, is dropping bombs. Divisive is killing children. Divisive is having children starve for weeks until they die. Divisive is having parents have to, in Gaza, make the decision to amputate my daughter's arm without anesthesia. And how do I start that process? And that's divisive. So when people say, I have a different opinion on genocide, it's divisive, you have to question them. But if you look at history, this is not new. You know, divisive, it was slavery, right? We want to protect the Union with or without slavery. If you're an abolitionist and you were against slavery, you were divisive. Why would you do such a thing? We want to, white people, we want some unity. And you can go on through Jim Crow. If you go and you look at Jim Crow, the apartheid that lived in America after slavery, what we know is that people said this is divisive. These agitators like Martin Luther King and others are being divisive. We're peaceful here. And of course, anytime a dominant group says there's peace or there's something going on, there are human rights crimes. It might be peaceful to you because you have silenced another group and you have oppressed another group. But when you say this is divisive, all you're doing is outing your privilege. That's all you're doing.
That's all you're doing. I agree. And speaking of divisive, I want to get this in, like, coming together to me is the opposite of division when you're coming together for truth, peace, and justice.
Oh, yeah.
And in that tone, I got a couple of things that I need to announce ASAP. ASAP. The first is that this Friday at 6:30 p.m. and Chuck, this was made for you. We're going to be having a book meeting at Tacoma, at the People's Books in Tacoma Park, with my friend Emily Brooks. I'm going to interview her about her book about law and order liberalism.
Mm.
It's a very important topic because it's this idea that says we can somehow police humanely, and ways in which the contradiction of the whole concept of humane policing comes into play. And it looks at it with a deep historical view of the origins of law and order liberalism as a concept, and
yeah,
how concepts serve to criminalize marginalized communities. That's the first thing. And I really hope people can come out to that. You'll see me there, 6:30 p.m., People's Books in Tacoma Park on Friday. The second thing I want to announce is that Sunday, March 10th, there's going to Community Vision for Tacoma Park is hosting, for Tacoma, I should say, is hosting a town hall Sunday, March 10th, 2 to 4 p.m. At the Tacoma, in the Tacoma Town Hall. That's 2 to 4 p.m. And it's going to be, a special guest there is County Executive Mark Elrich. It's going to be held at the Piney Branch Elementary School All-Purpose Room, 7510 Maple Avenue, Sunday, March 10th, 2 to 4 p.m., Community Vision for Tacoma, which is an informal network of more than 1,000 folks, with special guest County Executive Mark Ehrlich. We want to save affordable housing in Tacoma Park, so please come on out for that. Now, Chuck, that's what I have to announce. But the big announcement this week, and we do have to go to break in just a little bit, is the Dartmouth men's hoops team. You want to talk about sports and politics coming together. They decided that they were going to be a union, voting 13-2 to join SEIU Local 500. SEIU Local 500. Can you believe this?
It's
Dartmouth hoops. And it's a beautiful thing because there's so much to say about this, Chuck. SEIU Local 500 represents the workers on campus, from the librarians to the custodians to everybody. That's who, to the cafeteria workers. That's who SEIU 500 represents. And after the players voted 13-2, they had a game, and all the workers came out to the game and cheered them on.
That is unity. No. Okay, that's not divisive, that's unity.
No, that's what I'm talking about. You see that,
yeah,
unity that's being called division. You see the common thread,
yeah,
we're talking about here. That's unity that they choose to call division. And
this is
gutsy stuff what they're doing. I want to also read a tremendous quote by a couple of the players. teammates Cade Haskins and Romeo Merthil.
Do it.
Said, "We stuck together all season and won this election. It is self-evident that we as students can also be campus workers and union members. Dartmouth seems to be stuck in the past." No kidding. "It's time for the age of amateurism to end."
Mm.
Now, that's an important point. Let's go to a quick break right now. And, Chuck, when we come back, let's talk a little more about the Dartmouth men's hoops team and their unionization push, which has shocked both the college basketball and unionization world. And also, man, I'd love to just key in with you on this idea of amateurism and what makes it sham amateurism or shamateurism, and why it's so important that we view these revenue-producing college athletes as the workers that they are. We'll be back right after this on The Collision.
A game of chess is like a sword fight. You must think first, before you move.
Toonstaff is immensely strong and immune to nearly any weapon. When it's properly used, it's almost invincible.
Bro, I'ma give it to you with no trivia. Roll like cocaine straight from Bolivia. My hip hop will rock and shock the nation like the Emancipation Proclamation. With MCs, approach with slang is dead. Them eyes are running to the wall and bang your head. I push a force, my force you're doubting. I'm making devils cower to the Caucasus Mountain.
Well, I'm Messiah. I set the microphone on fire. Rap styles vary and carry like Mariah. I come from the Shaolin slum, and the alley I'm from is coming through with nothing. Enough guns. So if you want to come sweating, stressing, contesting, you got your soft swords at the midsection.
Gee, that was a bit of a surprising entry right there. This is Dave Zirin here on The Collision. That was, of course, the Wu-Tang Clan. I know Magic Mike is not a fan of the Wu-Tang Clan, so...
Oh, no, never.
Just seeing if you were paying attention, buddy.
Oh, wait.
No, Mike's a big fan, and Mike has actually incredibly helped my knowledge of understanding why they are such a generationally important musical act, and now having a residency in Las Vegas, which you have to classify under things I thought I'd never see. And I mean, I thought Vegas was for Celine Dion. And now Wu-Tang.
Vegas is for those who can bring Vegas money.
That is true. Very well put. People, Vegas is all about taking money out of your wallet. And if they have to do it through the roulette wheel or the Wu-Tang Clan, they're going to do it.
I mean, but let's be honest, man. When people go there, they kind of should know that before they go.
Oh, of course.
Okay.
Oh, of course. No. I mean, let me tell you. I mean, as long as we're talking about this, because this has a sports connection. I've been to Vegas once for quote-unquote pleasure, once for work. I never need to go back. Because both times when I went, I left lighter in the wallet and feeling a little bit like I needed to shower with steel wool.
No doubt.
I think it actually, for people who want to understand like capitalism in the modern world, I actually do think it's important to make one trip to Vegas just to experience it yourself, but you don't need a second trip. There's a reason why the casinos look so nice there. That's my free Vegas advice to everybody out there.
Thank you, Mr. Zirin.
Thank you. This was a public service announcement about why you should only go to Las Vegas once. Yeah, so Chuck Modiano, are you there, sir?
I'm here. Let's talk.
Sports in Vegas is just the same way, and then we'll get to Dartmouth, but the same way they vacuum the money out of your wallets, they're also vacuuming the money out of the wallets of taxpayers for building the new stadium for the Las Vegas Raiders and now trying to get the Oakland A's to move, although that seems like it's getting kiboshed in 50 different ways. Largely because of a revolt by people in the community who are saying our schools are in terrible shape, our libraries are in terrible shape, and we have money for sports stadiums? Absolutely not. Now, they pushed it through with the Vegas stadium. I mean, the Raiders stadium, but oh my goodness. I think that's about as far as they're going to get. But we'll see. We will see. In Vegas, the house always wins. But to take it back to Dartmouth, Chuck, I mean, there's a lot of very important things about this, and one of the most important is that the Dartmouth men's players are directly taking on this idea of amateurism, and I'm hoping maybe you can talk to our audience for a second about why when people say college sports is amateur sports, why that argument when it comes to the athletes is falling on deaf ears.
I mean, all you have to do is look at the revenue, right? And any other company, when you have $7 billion revenue, and I say $7 billion, that's what the NCAA football and the Big Ten reached, a $7 billion agreement, TV agreement. ESPN has its hands in all of these. The same with the SEC, $7 billion in football. I'm starting with football because they're king. But you have billion-dollar agreements as well, just TV deals with ESPN. So when you have billions, then you must have workers, right? Don't workers in a,
it's the way it works.
Parker, isn't that what capitalism is about? So all of a sudden, the billionaires love socialism, right? When we talk about socialism, we're talking about for the people. And I know it's a little problematic when I talk about that, but the point is that they like the idea of socialism when it's going to literally make themselves money. And you have written a great deal about this over the years, so I'm going to kick it back to you as far as the efficacy of this, whether this can work. But there's never been anything remotely close to amateurism, at least for decades, in college sports because of the billions that are generated. You know, maybe I don't know, 100 years ago there weren't all these TV contracts, and or 80 years ago this type of money didn't exist. But it's a joke.
Pitch softball.
I'm sorry?
You just threw me a slow pitch softball.
Let's knock it out of the park then, DZ.
All right. Yes, the college sports world is very different than it was even 10 years ago with regards to these billion-dollar contracts. And yes, TV contracts. And yes, one of the statistics that I love throwing out there is that Clemson University's top coach in football, Dabo Sweeney, makes over $10 million a year. When the Clemson football program won the national championship in 1981, their coach was a man named Danny Ford. Guess how much? I looked it up. You know what Danny Ford's salary was in 1981?
I'm going to take a crack. Okay.
Remember, coach of a national championship college football team. Remember, that's what we're talking about here.
Okay, was it $250,000?
It was $50,000.
Wow. You're saying the president of the university made more than the coach? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Yeah, back then, the university actually made more than the coach. The coach made 50 G. Now, 50 G in 1981, not a bad salary at all. I'm not sniffing my nose at that, but compare that to $10 million a year, the Dabo Sweeney. I mean, so how can you have a system where over the course of 40 years, it's changed and reconfigured itself so many times that a $50,000 a year job becomes a $10 million a year job, and yet the situation for the players, they tell us, has to stay the same. Now, that's why you're seeing a rebellion in college sports. The other slow pitch softball that you threw me, Chuck, is that, yes, 100 years ago, you didn't have these big revenue contracts. There wasn't this thing called the TV and the like. But even 100 years ago, you had people like W.E.B. Du Bois sounding the alarm. You had Upton Sinclair, so the author of The Jungle, best known for that, sounding the alarm that the setup for college athletics was messed up. They said the setup was messed up. And they thought it was messed up because they were already seeing the seedlings of a situation where our universities of higher learning were becoming feeder programs for professional sports. And because of the fanaticism that's defensible, certainly, but the fanaticism that would accompany it meant, like, Du Bois also, he said, wow, they're making seven times more goes to football than the classics program. You know, now a lot of schools don't have a classics program, and football is what students do every week, and classes are what they do to pass time in between the big games. So Du Bois was seeing the seedlings of something that has since become like a thick vine encircling our throats. And they said that 100 years ago, and we're still living it now, which is why the only social force that could have changed it, the players, yep, are standing up. And this unionization, Chuck, is so important, and I don't mean to talk your ear off. I want to throw it to you. But it's so important because we talk a lot about some of the changes that have taken place, like name, image, and likeness, which means that the players, if they want to, they didn't used to be able to do this as recently as a few years ago, can, you know, sell their face to the local gas station, or they can do a television commercial, or they can get a contract with a local deli and then be able to eat for free. Like, all these things used to be illegal, against the rules, would get you kicked out, banned from the sport, shamed, hurting your pro prospects. All of that has changed because of name, image, and likeness, and this thing called the transfer portal, which allows players to go to school more easily the way coaches can. However, Chuck, and as much as I have cheered on these changes because it's put more power in the hands of players, let's also be real about it. NIL and the transfer portal doesn't affect the power of the NCAA, right, and the total control they have over athletes. And NIL, it's great if you're a star,
right,
but if you're a backup offensive lineman whose you know, tailbone is now out of joint because of an injury, where are you going to go with regards to healthcare? Where are you going to go with regards to getting physical therapy? You know, that's what you need a union for.
Yes.
So everybody's represented, and so players are treated with the labor rights that NIL does not provide, or the transfer portal does not provide. Unionization is the key question. And by settling for NIL, what we're doing is, to use an expression that my grandpa used to like to say, all we're doing is kicking the can down the road. Well, the Dartmouth team is saying no can. By the way, real quick, the reason why I keep calling them the Dartmouth team and not like the Dartmouth Tigers or whatever is because they actually don't have a nickname, because they were known for a long time as a Native American mascot. And when they got rid of that, they couldn't decide what to replace it with. They're just going to be the Dartmouth team as we discuss them, just so folks know. The unofficial mascot is called the Keggy, which is a talking beer keg. But, you know, this is a family show, so we're not going to go there.
Dartmouth Darts.
The darts? Is that what they're going as?
No, I'm just – their logo will be a dartboard.
I actually think that's kind of cool. The darts? I know, like, you throw a football, you call it a dart.
That's true, yep. Or, you know, maybe a Capadonna be dots. Spitting, you know, he'd be throwing them darts.
You know, my son says dots. Like, Dad, I was throwing dots today, which I think is kind of cool. But take it to you, Chuck. We got a few more minutes before the break. Any more reflections or thoughts on what Dartmouth is doing and the way they are challenging the very setup of the NCAA? And I got some more stuff to say about this too.
But yeah, I'm going to kick it back to you soon, because I do want to know your thoughts on where it can go in the future. Now, I might say, you said kicking the can down the road. I'm a little more optimistic in how I describe the NIL. Your assessment is right. You know, and the transfer portal. I would say we were kicking dominoes, and that those dominoes and those pieces that were overturned are giving others more courage, like the Dartmouth team, to say, let's take this to the next level, and that this is part of a longer fight. And what I'm wondering is, when you and they're going to be legal challenges. Let's just be honest about this. That's right. But when this happens, we also have to know that when the bigger schools who have really the leverage jump in, what does that look like? And that's really where we want this to go. So will Dartmouth be the first of many dominoes towards unionization? But you're really the expert. Listen, you have written books talking about this and countless articles. So I want to hear what you think, not what you want to happen, but what you think could happen.
Well, the most important news is that Mike just texted me that Dartmouth is now calling themselves the Big Green. Let me be clear about that. I don't like if your name is just a color. Like, be the Green Hornets or something. Like, not just the Big Green. That's whack as hell. Pardon my language. Look, I've got so much to say about this, and I think we can go a couple minutes past 10:30 just to describe what I think is happening. Look, what's going to happen is there's going to be a ton of lawsuits, because the NCAA's position is, you will pry sham amateurism from my cold, dead hands.
Yes.
That's their perspective on this. Now, that being said, the NCAA is also flushing millions of dollars down the drain. Hiring lawyers. You said there will be lawyers. These lawyers do not come cheap. They have hundreds of lawyers on staff at the NCAA. They're going to put them all to work to stop this. They also have lobbyists who, by the way, not an inexpensive expense to hire lobbyists who have also taken loss after loss after loss on these questions. So the lobbyists lose all the time. The lawyers lose all the time. The NCAA is flushing millions of dollars. Now, if it was forward-looking and it was smart, it would say, you know what? Collective bargaining at least provides a framework for going forward, as opposed to more of a, you know, wild scene of, you know, people going for NIL money over here, people transferring over there. These things could be collectively bargained for the benefit of all players and for granting the NCAA, you know, just a measure of control is the wrong word, but just to be able to sit across a table and say, let's figure out how to do college sports in a more equitable way. We're all stakeholders here. Let's try to figure it out.
Has that ever happened in history, DZ, with owners, ever?
I mean, you know, I look at the union movement in this country. You know, there were certainly people in the steel industry, the auto industry, who were ready to shoot down strikers and do it that way. And then there were other folks who were like, well, we actually don't have the choice because it's going to be the common ruin of both sides, or the union, we're going to have to admit that the union broke us down. And now we have to sit and figure out what we're going to do going forward. I think the NCAA has to admit that the unionization question is a checkmate. And now they need to decide whether they're just going to upturn the whole table or whether they're going to actually sit down and deal with it. And unfortunately, I mean, and this is where your question comes, I think there's a chance that they will try to upturn the table and try to keep this in litigation for decades. But by doing so, they are absolutely shooting themselves in the foot. And all it exposes to me is that they hate unions and they hate the thought of empowered college kids more than they, you know, hate the thought of losing the sports altogether.
That's right. That's right. And even the NIL, who led by Ed O'Bannon, didn't that take like 8 years in court to become a reality?
Yeah. Took a long time. I mean, what they can do to tie these things up in the courts is just disgusting. It's about money, power, and privilege, as you like to say, Chuck.
Yeah, sure.
So correctly. But I think they're in a position now where if the unionization thing, like I can tell you, I spoke yesterday for this article to the head of the College Football Players Association. And this dude, his name's Jason Stahl, very good dude. He's like, he was basically sounding like he had a rocket ship attached to his pants. He was like, boom, taken off to outer space, saying, you know, this is the example that we've been waiting for.
That's right.
You know, and so if this expands, if this spreads, ooh, and if there's a friendly National Labor Relations Board, ooh, NCAA is going to have to admit defeat, or it's going to have to upturn the entire chess table. But, yo, let's go to break right now. We can touch on this a little more when we get back, Chuck, but I've got so much more I want to talk to you about. Who knows where to begin? Who knows where to end? This is The Collision. We're always rolling on this show. We'll be back right after this on WPFW, your home for jazz and justice.
It has come to our attention that a mysterious force is loose somewhere in outer space.
The mysteries of creation are there.
Up in the sky?
Up in the sky.
The moon and the planets are there. And new hopes for knowledge and peace are there. And therefore, as we set sail, we ask God's blessing on the most hazardous and dangerous and greatest adventure of which man has ever embarked.
Shall bring disaster to evil's factors. Demonic chapters shall be captured by kings through the storms of days after, and to the earth from the sun through triple darkness to plaster with a force that can't be compared to any firepower, for its mind power shared. The brainwave causes vessels to circulate like constellations reflect at night off the lake. Word to the Father and Mother Earth, seeking everlasting life through this hell for what it's worth. Look, listen, and observe. And watch another C-cycle pulling my peeps to the curb. Heed the words, it's like ghetto-style proverbs. The righteous pay a sacrifice to get what they deserve. Cannot afford to be confined to a cell. Brainwaves swell, turning the desert to a well. Experience the best teacher. Fonts will spray like street sweepers. Little daddy street preacher. Illustrious feature, narrator you select. Accompanied by deck, plus the DJ you respect. The 7.5 combined over the front line. The 10% is promoting slander in the airtime. Bear in mind, jewels be the tools of the trade. Sharp blades, heavenly praise, and dues are paid.
We are back here on The Collision, where sports and politics collide. He's Chuck Modiano. I'm Dave Zirin. Here at your home for Jazz and Justice, 89.3 FM WPFW. That was, of course, The Guru. But, Mike, tell us everything about that track, because my head was bopping.
That was Gangstar, Above the Clouds. There is a verse with Inspector Deck on there, but unfortunately, I didn't have time to play it.
Arg! Maybe as we leave, because Inspector Deck, oh my goodness, the unsung Wu-Tang hero.
Yes, sir.
In my view, the one people don't mention in their first breath, but who might have the most skills of them all. Just my opinion. I know, Mike, you probably have some strong ones, so I should probably change the subject right away.
Yeah, do that.
But first, taking it to you, Chuck, I want to talk to you a little about your thoughts about Caitlin Clark and how she relates to all this NIL stuff. But first, I know there's a protest tonight. I want to give you the chance to shout it out before the time gets away from us.
Right. I glossed over it very quickly, but I want to say what it is at Lafayette Square at 6 p.m. It's the people's State of the Union. See, Joe Biden's doing a State of the Union, and there are going to be a lot of lies told. And the people's State of the Union, there's going to be a lot of truth told. Things you'll hear like ceasefire now, end all U.S. aid to Israel, lift the siege on Gaza, and more. So that's it. Lafayette Square, 6 p.m. tonight, the People's State of the Union.
Wow, that's beautiful. And I love that they're doing that. I know one of the organizers of it. Shout out to Rama putting that together. And, you know, that's an important place to be, because sometimes watching State of the Union, especially in times such as this, so fraught with questions of war and genocide, I mean, it can be unbearable. So you end up hiding underneath the bed or putting the pillow around your ears or hoping or praying for any other distraction. Well, instead of being distracted by what's happening, let's confront it. And you don't have to confront it on your TV by yourself. You can confront it at the People's State of the Union. I believe that was 6 p.m. Lafayette Park, Lafayette Square.
That's exactly right.
Excellent. Very, very, very happy you just put that out there, Chuck. Now, Chuck, Caitlin Clark also shows that if the NCAA can surrender some of its power, the sport itself will be better. We don't have to go on this too long, but I think it's really interesting that that there were forces, including Fox Sports, who were saying to Caitlin Clark, stay in Iowa for a fifth year, and we'll pay you more than the WNBA could dream of paying you.
That's right.
Now, I think to Caitlin Clark's absolute credit, she said no.
Yes.
Because rather than a fifth year where she, I mean, it's such a sham. Like, you know, she'd already have been graduated. She would just be going fifth year for the cash, and that's her right to do. Good. But also, she's never been hotter as a, there's no other way to put it, as a basketball commodity. And so she has the chance to change the WNBA, to make it bigger, to make it more of a sensation. People are going to want to see what she's doing, and she could transform the entire economy of women's basketball. She's that special. So you flash it to the NCAA. At least what that shows is that everybody decries about college basketball in particular, about the players leaving too soon. And you hear it a little bit in football too. Well, if you can make it worth the while of Caleb Williams to stay at USC – if you could make it worth the while of a Caitlin Clark, then you're actually making college sports as a product better as well.
Yeah.
Because you're not forcing people out because of financial hardship or the like.
That's right.
And the other thing, because it goes with what we talk about, Chuck, is that one of the things I like about Caitlin Clark is she has resisted all efforts to paint her as kind of reminds me of Bill Walton in the 1970s. like trying to paint her as kind of this great white hope in women's basketball when she has rejected that. Like when she refused to take the bait and be in some ridiculous feud media generated with Angel Reese of LSU. And instead they showed their mutual respect. Or when she went out of her way, when she broke Kelsey Plum's scoring record to say, well, there's Lynette Woodard's record too. Yeah. It just wasn't under the auspices of the NCAA. But Lynette Woodard of Kansas, who, of course, played for the Harlem Globetrotters as well and never gets talked about and never gets her respect and flowers, was given respect and flowers by Caitlin Clark. So those are just a couple of things where I feel like, okay, you know, this person, I mean, at the bare minimum has her head on right with regards to the role that black women played in making the sport what it is.
Right. And I love that you said she didn't take the bait, because at the time with Angel Reese, all the media was, oh my God, Angel Reese is being disrespectful. And Caitlin Clark was, oh no, that's all fair game. You know, I talk crap too. And I thought that's important. And then let's be clear, you know, this past week, there was a women's game with Caitlin Clark in Iowa that was the highest rated women's regular season game in 25 years. There are Caitlin Clark games that are outdoing the men's basketball games. We're talking big money. And Fox News, and they're absolutely right. If she stays a fifth year, she's going to make way more money than she would make in the WNBA through NIL. But so would the NCAA. And people don't know. A lot of people may not know this. But the WNBA has a cap on salaries right now. It has a cap. Like it has a cap on individual salaries, meaning other sports and the men's sports may have an overall cap, but they have an individual cap. I can't remember the exact number, but for stars, I don't know, it was like a couple hundred thousand or something like that. Mm-hmm. So she has taken less money in the short run and not giving all these free billions over to the NCAA. So I think it's the right move, and I think it will help take the NCAA to the next level. I mean, there's no question. Listen, she could flat out ball. There's no question about that. Is that true? And is it also true that her whiteness brings in a white people who may not have come in if she was black and could ball the same way? That is also true. Both those things are true. She could flat out ball, hitting Steph Curry shots from the logo, and she's going to bring in white people into WNBA. So we don't have to necessarily separate those two things, but I do think your point is important, that there's going to be a lot of bait thrown her way, and hopefully she continues to not take that bait and cite the Lynette Woodwards.
Amen to that. Very well said. Now, Chuck, we've talked some serious stuff on this show. You know, we've talked about the protest tonight at the State of the Union. We've talked about how tomorrow night, Friday, I'm going to be interviewing Emily Brooks about policing over at People's Books in Tacoma Park. We've talked about, you know, the protest at the, as you correctly put it, the Zionist embassy last Saturday. We've talked about a lot of serious stuff. We've talked about the NCAA. We've talked about Dartmouth. I want to talk about something just a little bit lighter, but something that's also on my brain. Okay. Throwing it your way, Chuck. Are you ready? These sports radio question out there right now. You look at the National Basketball Association. You see the 8th-ranked Lakers, the 9th-ranked Warriors, or it might even be 9th and 10th right now. Yet the basketball world still wants to know, can either of those teams make a run and actually unseat Denver and head into the Western Conference Finals, out of the Western Conference Finals and into the NBA Championship, almost certainly to play the Boston Celtics? I ask of thee, Chuck, of the Warriors or the Lakers, who do you at least give a better chance to be able to shock the world, burn through the playoff seedings, and make it to the NBA championship?
See, I thought you were going to ask a different question. I thought you were going to leave it at make a run, okay? If you just said make a run, I might have gone with the Lakers. And everything, anytime you talk about the Lakers, it starts with a healthy AD, right? He has to be healthy and balling out for that to happen, you know, and just do what he does, in addition to what LeBron brings miraculously at age 39. I don't think either of them can make a run. I just don't think, I mean, a finals run.
Well, which one's more likely? More likely.
That's a good question. I mean, when you got a guy like the argument is, I'm not giving you a great answer, but if you have an argument for Golden State, it's because a guy like Steph Curry, he could just be unconscious, right, and do well. But I do believe you need size up front when you're trying to battle Denver. And I noticed you just skipped right over the two top teams right now, which are the Timberwolves and OKC. And, you know, we could have a discussion on that. But well, I think you need some, some size. And I don't know if Golden State necessarily has that. And I don't even know if the Lakers, we saw that versus Denver last year. They really lack size, even with AD. So I think when you're talking about Denver, they're so tall, they're so long, size is important. And I think both give away in that area.
Well, I agree with you about that 1,000%. I mean, when you have one of the great big man defenders of his generation, Anthony Davis, routinely put in the torture chamber by Nikola Jokic, I mean, you know that size is a problem and an issue. Yeah. LeBron is in his 21st season. First of all, incredible. He's averaging 25 points a game. I mean, amazing. Just a marvel. The GOAT, I'm sorry, 40,000 points. 40, I'm sorry.
Hey, do you know what? In assists, we mentioned the 40,000. Do you realize he's number four all-time in assists? Number four all-time in assists. Do you realize that there's only one forward in the top 35 individuals of all-time assists? And it is only LeBron James of the top 35. And he's number four. You have to go to the number 36 of Scottie Pippen.
Holy cow. Forward.
Yes.
Holy cow.
That might be more amazing than 40,000.
I mean, it's all amazing. Yeah. I mean, it's amazing that people still question whether or not he is the GOAT. I mean, I'll always respect Michael Jordan, but the sum of LeBron's career is so awe-inspiring.
Yeah, and some people are listening and getting very angry. Let us know, we're from the Michael Jordan generation. We grew up on Michael Jordan, so we're not some kids talking, right?
Right. And speaking of kids, the reason why I don't give a lot to Oklahoma City or Minnesota making it to the NBA Finals is because these are babies in terms of playoff experience and in terms of age. I mean, the Nuggets, to me, are just a terrifying team where they can just decide to win and then they'll win. They're the class of the West. But if any team can beat them, let me say this, I like the Golden State Warriors.
Okay.
And you're right about the size question, but they've been so much better since Draymond Green came back from his suspension and Jonathan Kuminga has taken this leap as this very young man who can do all kinds of wondrous things with the ball. And Steph Curry is Steph Curry.
Period. That's right.
And yeah. I will take a 36-year-old Steph Curry over a 97-year-old LeBron James. I mean, and this is where, sorry, that wasn't very nice. But Steph, to me, just is still doing Steph things, while what's asked of LeBron is so intense to ask of somebody in their 21st year. Think about it. Round after round after round, 4 out of 7 each and every time. I just think the Warriors, you know, they've got more young players in the rotation. They're built for it.
That's right. And Draymond Green, we saw when he's out just what a huge difference it makes when he's out. They're just a different team.
I'm not a fan of Draymond. I think I don't like bullies. I think he's a bit of a bully. I think what he did to Jordan Poole, now of course on the Wizards, is unconscionable.
Unconscionable?
Look, I don't like it when big guys sucker punch little guys. It does bad things to me. Maybe it just brings back bad memories.
You must not like watching 90s basketball, Dave.
I know. Weren't you a Knicks fan or something?
I was a Knicks fan, but.
Like, teammates, where is this coming from?
Teammates, hands down by his waist. And Draymond, okay. So much talky-talky.
Okay, we could agree to disagree about Draymond and the areas you're talking about for the sake of time. But I don't think we could agree to disagree on his value to the team on the court.
All right, agreed. How about this? I won't agree to disagree because he's the best defender of his generation. And he unlocks Steph. By playing point guard, he unlocks him.
Great point.
But it also then raises the point. People say Steph is, oh, he's the maybe the best point guard ever or second to Magic. Get away with that. He's a combo guard. Isaiah Thomas, you know, in 80s and 90s basketball, I'll never forget what Isaiah meant to those Detroit Pistons. And I'm going to stand with that every step of the way. That's just me. So here's another question for you, Chuck, in the time we have left. Can any team in the Eastern Conference top the Boston Celtics?
Well, there are only two that have a chance.
Okay.
And that is Milwaukee, and that is Philadelphia. Those are the only two that have it. They're the only ones in discussion. I would love to tell you my Knicks are in discussion, but they're a player away in the offseason, okay? And I love Jalen Brunson. But those are the only two. And I think Milwaukee, who hasn't played great, they have pieces, right? They have pieces. And if Giannis goes off, and you know, Dame also a lot of times goes to another level in the playoffs. There's always that. I don't know, as great as Embiid is playing, I don't know if Philly has enough. So I would lean more towards Milwaukee. But I think right now, I think Celtics are the one that's going to come out of these.
They are historically amazing. If you look at things like average margin of victory, where they are in terms of being one of the top offenses and one of the top defenses. We talked about Draymond sort of unlocking Golden State Warriors. If you had told me before the season that a man by the name of Kristaps Porzingis would not only be healthy, but would unlock the way that offense runs and free things up for Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Derek White, just by being able to space the floor and protect the rim, wow. Exciting stuff in Boston. And I, you know me, my very genetics are built to not like the Boston Celtics.
Oh, as are mine. And I'll be honest, I thought they were going to take a step back when they let go of Marcus Smart. You know, I could admit when I'm wrong, and I was wrong on this one. By the way, Porzingis coming back from his injury a few years later is doing things that he was. He turned into a jump shooter for a couple of years, and now, you know, he could bring it to the rack. So he's getting some spring back. You add that, but I thought it was not a good deal when you let go of Marcus Smart. I was wrong.
Wow. Chuck admitting that he's wrong. This is a special day.
That's right.
Someone write that down. This
write
is
it down.
March 7th, 2024. Chuck is wrong.
Right. Oh. It's not that I can't be humble. It's that I'm usually right. That's the problem.
That's true. Now you sound like Coach. That's the sort of thing Coach would say. He said, it's not my fault. Yeah. I'm right all the time.
I know. What am I going to do?
I don't know. It's the curse that you must bear, sir.
Exactly.
Well, we're just about running out of time. Chuck, I want to give you just a quick second to just review any and all protest options for people listening right now.
Yeah, we tonight, State of the Union by the people. Okay, 6 p.m. Lafayette Square. That's tonight. And then back there of International Women's Day, 1 p.m. tomorrow. People want to go to that. But we want to show a real State of the Union that's happening Thursday. I also want to say this. Some people might know about Joshua Williams. Joshua Williams is a political prisoner in Ferguson who was locked up for many, many years. And he's still locked up and has some internal, I would say, hearings going on. And, you know, it's important that, you know, people give him support. Is a sort of a, I don't want to say a legal hearing next week, but a hearing around parole. People could write letters, send emails. And that's something I could certainly post on my Twitter, which I will after this call, at ChuckMoD1, post that on Twitter. So, you know, some of those things help because he's been a political prisoner. Most people would have gotten probation, and he's been locked up 10 years. We're coming up at 10 years on Ferguson. So it's
Chuck, sorry. Go ahead. I'll stop
right there. I should have led with that at the beginning. But yeah. No,
it's important. And I'll just say at the event I'm going to be at tomorrow, 6:30 p.m., People's Books in Tacoma Park, talking about policing. We'll make sure to have information about Josh Williams there.
Right. Okay, perfect.
Plug people in. So anything that you can get to me, Chuck, like phone numbers, addresses, I'll make sure there's one on every single chair there tomorrow night.
I will do that. Thank you.
Yo, thanks to everybody for listening to us here on The Collision. We always appreciate you, every single one of you. Believe that. For everybody out there listening, please stay frosty. We are out of here. Peace.
I leave scientists mentally scarred, triple extra large, wild like rock stars who smash guitars, poison bars from the guards, bust holes in your mirage, catch a charge.
I span the universe and return to earth to claim my throne. The maker, owner, plus soul controller. Ayatollah rest in the sky, the clouds my sofa. Stand like colossus, regardless to whom or what. Numerous attempts in my life, so who to trust? Who but us? Supplier with the fire, the burning truth, 150 absolute proof on the mic like Moses spoke in golden scribe, survivor of the oldest tribe whose soldiers die. I know the five families, we shed tears and mourn, but our hands are on the ammo cause the battle's still on. Sound the horn, we come rumbling through the function, precise laser beam technique to touch something. When we die hard, they build a monument to honor us with humongous effect in the world, we could have conquered it.
Above the crowd, above the crowd.
Celebrating 20 years, the New African Film Festival, presented by AFI and Africa World Now Project, brings the vibrancy of African filmmaking from all corners of the continent and across the diaspora to the DMV at the AFI Silver Theater and Cultural Center in downtown Silver Spring from March 15 to the 28th. The festival features 26 films from 16 countries, including 3 years premieres and discussions with filmmakers. Explore the diversity of new filmmaking from Africa at the 2024 New African Film Festival. Tickets and full schedule at AFI.com/silver. That's AFI.com/silver. Or call 301-495-6700. 301-495-6700. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
WPFW Local Station Board invites you to attend our town hall meeting Saturday, March 16th at the New Bethany Baptist Church, 1300 10th Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., from noon until 2:30 p.m. Our theme is WPFW, Generations Moving Forward in Unity. Listeners and supporters of all ages are welcome. Young listeners are especially encouraged to attend. We want to hear from you concerning community needs, shaping future broadcasting, and more. Listeners can also take this opportunity to bid farewell to the station's general manager, Jerry Paris, who is retiring after 10 years of service. Connect with WPFW as we plan to move forward together in unity. If unable to attend in person, a Zoom link will be posted on the website. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
WPFW presents We Who Believe in Freedom, Women, Culture, and Resistance, in celebration of International Women's Day 2024 from 5 a.m. until midnight, Friday, March 8th. While women must be lifted up every day, International Women's Day gives us a formal opportunity to celebrate how women show up in the world as culture keepers and warriors for truth and justice, and to be in solidarity with women around the globe working to ensure a brighter future for all of us. That's We Who Believe in Freedom, Women, Culture, and Resistance, in celebration of International Women's Day this Friday, March 8th, 5 a.m. until midnight, here on your station for jazz and justice, WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
I'm calling you, women. I'm calling you, calling.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, asking you to support WPFW. We ask you, please, to go to the website and make a pledge, maybe $47 or $470 if you can, or $47 a month, to WPFW.org. Hey, if you want to get dinner and a show in New York, if you want to bring a guest with you, maybe your partner or daughter or son, a friend you want to meet up with in New York, watch the broadcast of Democracy Now! Live, 8 in the morning, sit on the set as we broadcast on over 1,000 stations, and then I get to personally host you for a meal, and we will toast WPFW, and it is an amazing time. We call it dinner and a show, you and your special guest. That's a $2,000 tax-deductible charitable contribution that goes directly to WPFW. Go online at WPFW.org. And by the way, you don't have to know when you can come to New York, where Democracy Now! Is based. Just make that call or go online at WPFW.org. make the pledge, and then we'll get in touch with you and work out the details. Maybe you're coming to New York soon, or it won't be for a year. This doesn't expire because we don't want WPFW to expire. Again, go to WPFW.org. And thank you so much. We were there
in the factory. Elise Bryant here. Bev Grant and the D.C. Labor Corps